Hey, and welcome to the Building Community Podcast. It's a show for people like you who know that success depends on relationships. That's why this season, we focus on success through connection. We talk about connecting deeply with people in our circles, at work, and in our personal spaces. And we also shine the light on ourselves so we can better connect with our priorities and goals to be our very best selves. I'm your host, Simone Petsch, and I've been helping people build connections for over a decade and a half. Ready for it? Listen in to learn about connections that help you thrive. If there's a person who knows about creating caring cultures in organizations, it's Marie Gill. Marie's the community leader of the Flourishing at Work Network. She's also the co-founder of Thorns Collective. And she's the one who brought magic to Starbucks as the founder and executive director at Green Apron Alliance, that Starbucks corporate alumni program. Marie focused on people all her life. That's why I wanted to talk to her. She sat down to chat with me about characteristics of the leaders of our future, about the role employers play when it comes to well-being of their team members, how data is a key driver for building caring cultures, and especially how little things help people flourish in all aspects of their lives. Our conversation, it was simply inspiring. This is the Building Community Podcast. Thanks for joining me today, Marie. It's really great to have you with us.
Really great to be here. Thank you so much.
Marie, I'm truly excited to bring this conversation to our listeners, in part because I truly relate to what it is that you do. You're on a mission to help people flourish, and that's a mission that also reflects mine with Thrycom, with thriving connections globally. And you talk about flourishing, and that word flourishing is often used synonymously to thriving. And throughout your career, you've done a lot of different things to impact others. You've worked with Starbucks and initiated the Starbucks Alumni Association called the Green Apron Alliance in 20 countries with over 30,000 members all over the place. Tell me what it is that drives you on a personal level. What is it that fuels you?
That's such a great question. I've always been very focused on finding justice and fairness with people in my life, but it's translated into a commitment to building communities. I realize that, you know, as human beings, we all need to lean on each other. There's so many things about life that just go better and go easier and go happier when you can tap someone on the shoulder or be just side by side with someone. And so for me, building communities and building connections and networks and people around me are very important. So that's why I work so hard to lift up this opportunity for our Starbucks alumni group. But I translate that energy and that focus and that sense of purpose into helping companies create well-being and community focus within their employee populations. And all those individual humans need help.
We've seen this immense awareness of community. People are talking about it much, much more in the last few years. What it means in our lives, how togetherness, this being seen, this being heard, this having a place that we belong to, how that impacts us as individuals. What is it specifically that community means to you as a person, aside from the Starbucks alumni community, aside from the communities at organizations? What role does community hold in your life?
Yeah, so community for me is defined in a variety of ways. One, it can just be your really close-knit group of friends and family and people that are around you. I also look at the multiple types or different types of communities I'm part of. You know, I'm part of the Starbucks community. I'm part of the Pacific Northwest community. I'm part of all these different shapes and types of communities. But throughout all of them, I want to make sure my engagement as a community member is one that is purpose-filled and also committed to lifting up others. I think if you think about embracing community in all of its different forms, you start to recognize your ability to impact positively. I want to make sure I'm focused on bringing the best out of everybody I'm with, and it just comes out in this concept of community.
Yeah, I mean, community is truly individual to us. Like you said, each and every one are part of multiple different communities. The big question that we see now being discussed is,
what role can organizations, what role can employers play when it comes to community for their team members, for their employees, for us as individuals? And you've done a lot of work on that, looking at the ideal workplace with Florence Collective. Do you want to tell us a little bit about what you do there?
Sure. So at Florence Collective, we are committed to using data to help drive decision-making from the lens of the workplace. We start first with data of how well your people are doing. And then the real magic comes when we partner with our Harvard ecosystem to connect the data that we have discovered and uncovered in partnership with these companies. And then we work with team leaders, whether you manage one person or 100 people or 1,000 people, your unique approach, your unique needs are going to be really specific to you. And so we help you map interventions that will help you and your team through this idea of being a human first, put your own oxygen mask on, and now you can be able to help others.
So basically, you're going into organizations, helping them assess their own health and well-being when it comes to employees and culture.
Yes.
And then you're going to advise them what type of tools they can bring in, what type of methodology, what type of new programs or services they can introduce so to be a better organization for their team members, so to make a bigger impact, not just internally, but also outward facing towards clients, towards customers, towards the ecosystem that's out there.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's not just introducing something new. One of the most exciting things that we see with some of these companies is with their data, it literally creates the context for them to reintroduce or re-empower their people with the services and programs they're already providing. So one of the domains that we look at is financial material stability. And almost every company out there has some form of savings or retirement programs like 401k or stock options, that kind of thing. And for a lot of companies we talk to, they're like, well, we give those things to everybody, but not everyone's taking advantage of it. Well, when you frame it in the context of we care about you, we understand that you're not doing well or that you need support and help, here's a way for us to help you. Now, suddenly, all those things like the EAP, the employee assistance programs, the hotlines for mental well-being, the yoga sessions that are offered at lunchtime, all that stuff now becomes part of the context of we care, we want a healthy, thriving resource, and we want to help people. And so it helps companies better use the great things they've already invested in. And it's through that lens of let's get the data. Let's really understand, deeply understand what your people need and look at it through the team leader level. And now for each team leader, let's co-create the interventions that are needed to help them.
So we're talking about financial health. We're talking about physical health, and we're talking about mental health initiatives that we see in organizations. What else could organizations be focusing on when it comes to well-being?
We are deeply embracing the work of Dr. Tyler Vanderwill from the Human Flourishing Program at Harvard University. And it is through his deep research and his lifetime of assessing the different types of work that's out there and the different types of approaches. And these seven domains that we look at are universally respected and appreciated across all cultures. These seven are universally accepted and they're uniquely measurable. I like to say data, not drama. So kind of going back to a basic fundamental principle of like Maslow's hierarchy of needs, you know, financial material stability is one of the domains we look at. It is the one domain that will directly impact positively or negatively all the other six domains. It makes sense. If you're struggling on being able to put food on the table or wonder if rent will be paid next month, it's hard to say you're flourishing if you're just struggling with that weight, right? It's hard to have close social relationships. It's hard to stay focused on your overall happiness and mental well-being if things are constantly working against you. And so it's through the assessment that we put out to these organizations that allows them to literally look at key drivers of each of those seven domains to understand where specifically should we focus We want to sit with that team leader, not the CEO and not the head of HR particularly, but in concert with that team leader to say, here's what your team level data says. Here's what your daily life, your daily work structure looks like. How can we help you come up with what you need? And so for big companies in particular, this idea of like peanut buttering the resources across everybody, you all will benefit from this. It doesn't always work. And so they come back and say, gosh, the uptake on that app was really dismal and we spent all this money and see, no one cares. We tried. But if you actually co-create with that team leader, you might find that the head of customer service has a really unique recipe of interventions compared to the resources coming from another team. So it's all customized based on what you need and what that company's data points to.
So what we see in organizations, especially here in the United States, that's a bit different in Europe, is that individual approaches are having the most positive effects. It's not a one size fits all anymore. It's not a program for the entire organization, for all employees. It's going deeper. It's having those conversations, as you're mentioning, with our team leaders, but also further down to the level of the individual to see what do different groups with similar characteristics in an organization, what do they have in common? What are their needs? So let me ask you, Marie, when it comes to employee well-being, what are the roadblocks that you see in your daily work?
I'll just start with the very first part of where we like to start is if we don't have 100% commitment to taking on this endeavor at the very highest level of the organization, it's really hard to get anything done. It's hard to work with a mid-level manager who says, I'm committed to helping my people. But if they show up for work and don't have the budget, don't have the time, don't have the attention, and most importantly, if what they're saying is not reverberating throughout the rest of the organization, it's going to sound really hollow. It's going to sound really unauthentic. And so companies that are committed to overall well-being and true workplace transformation have to look at this as like, we're all in. We're looking at it from the very top to the very bottom, and we're holding everyone accountable to achieving this shared goal. What we're trying to commit to is a caring culture. Those that are striving for the highest levels of maturity recognize that the commitment internally of creating a caring culture is priority, but the aspirational goal is to be able to extend their impact externally. So working with governments, working with communities to influence policies that help their people thrive is really important. And so a lot of companies we work with are saying, we're all in, we're going to work on this together. We know we have this huge investment, this huge lift to get the internal caring culture created, but we aspire to being able to only work with other companies that will provide goods and services to us that also share this goal. We want to work with the local governments to make sure policies are in favor of achieving this goal. And it just now says that not only is it a pebble in the pond and reverberates through, now it's a massive boulder splashing in, and it really impacts a lot of people.
We're talking about a very, very big effort here. This is not something that a lot of organizations, a lot of CEOs are willing and able to tackle. What is, in your opinion, in your experience, one of those reasons why a CEO would go there? Where do they see the ROI of those efforts? Because we're not talking about a 1 month, a 1 year effort here. We're talking about a longer process over many, many, many years, and it needs to be throughout the entire fiber of an organization.
Yeah. So a lot of what we measure, a lot of what we're striving for is also in parallel to other ESG efforts as well. So if you think about the environmental sustainability and global impact, companies have to think about long-term supply chain requirements, long-term revenue generation, right? A lot of that is benefited by having a sustainable workforce, a group of people that are mission and purpose focused, that love what they do, are happy as individuals, that don't worry about childcare at home, that don't worry about paying rent. When workforces are able to show up and be their whole selves, then everybody wins. I think a lot of companies are starting to recognize this. If we work together, we can definitely get there. There's a couple of things that give me a lot of hope, a lot of reasons why I roll out of bed is I see the influence of workers today. A lot of young people are being very open and very direct about what they need in their life and how they want to show up and who they want to work for and why they want to work there. I love that. I think it's great. Keep pushing on that. And at the same time, these CEOs and chief people officers and leaders of these companies recognize that's the next generation of workers coming in. And the old school and the old ways of doing things don't work anymore. And there's a lot of financial reasons why they need to do that. There's a lot of longevity and sustainability issues that are tied to that. And so how do we get all of them on the same page? And it's through the lens of data. The data says this, therefore you need to do that. And that is having an impact one company at a time, one person at a time. It will make a difference. I go back to it takes a village. If there's a bunch of people doing it, all of a sudden, it's going to like be a big difference.
Well, we see the shift in employer branding. A lot of organizations put more focus, put more resources on that now. And not only because it's a bigger effort now to attract top talent, but they're also having this big challenge of retaining talent. We want to work for organizations that reflect our own personal values, that reflect where we want to be in life, where we want to go in life.
I think that in the old days, we put up with a lot. We just kind of went through like, I need this job. I need to get the paycheck. I need to just show up. I need to do what I got to do. But now we know what leaders of the future need to look like. And quite frankly, I think there's a lot of people out there at those leadership levels saying, I'm not necessarily the right person for this role anymore. I need to make way for the next generation of leaders. The next generation of leaders are going to be focused on their own well-being. They're going to know that it takes them to step out and get pause and reflect and regenerate to be able to help the next people that are in line with them. They're going to be very purpose-driven. They're not going to just show up to just to cash a paycheck. They're going to show up because they truly believe they can make an impact, that they can do something differently. And so leaders of the future are going to look and sound a lot different than what we've been used to. And I think it's in that collective that they're going to lift up the companies they work for. They're going to create those caring cultures, and they're going to set a level of expectations for the next generation to demand more.
I totally can support this. The leaders of the future are people who support others in the organization, and they not only want to make an impact on others on an individual level, they're also willing, and they know they have to model that behavior that they're trying to incentivize others to show. So they're not the ones just saying, they're actually ones doing.
Absolutely. Yeah. And they will be held accountable. Yeah.
And that accountability, that brings me maybe back to what you said in the beginning, that those are all considerations that trickle down from the very top throughout the entire organization. A big question here is, who in an organization owns the topic of well-being, the topic of how do we support people? Because oftentimes it's still the HR and people teams when it's about corporate culture that's not really functioning the way it should.
It cannot be with one single person. But who owns well-being? Every one of us, period. Every single one of us. And that includes the individual employees showing up. They have to take care of themselves. They have to make decisions that will benefit and support them. They can't be a good worker. They can't be a good coworker if they're not being able to thrive themselves. So every single person in the organization owns well-being. It has to be a top-down, a bottom-up, and all across. So the board of directors, I put a lot of weight on the board of directors, the investors, shareholders, you know, let's get everybody involved and engaged and passionate about being responsible for their impact. So shareholders own the responsibility to the companies they support to say, how are you taking care of people? How are you committed to that? Boards of directors need to be in place to support the C-level to make sure that they're focused and prioritizing on it. That C-level needs to hold the responsibility of building a caring culture all the way down into their organization. How are you holding each other accountable to achieving this mission of caring culture? And so everyone owns it. No workforce transformation can take place if it's not unilaterally accepted and set up as a tremendous goal for that company.
If every one of us owns responsibility for our well-being, how can we foster a culture of trust and inclusivity? Because if I'm not doing well and I'm the one who's speaking up, how can I be sure that I get the support that I need in my organization instead of being made the black sheep, instead of being looked at, instead of a finger being pointed at me or me just being pushed aside? What needs to be there in organizations? What needs to be in place as safety mechanisms, as a framework for us to actually facilitate what we want to see in the organization?
I bring it down to the power and influence of that team leader and looking at what does the leadership of the future need to look like. Leaders of the future will recognize that each one of their direct reports is a unique human being, complex, messy, challenging. And if you don't embrace the fact that you're managing other humans, then you probably shouldn't be in that role. So it starts with that team leader recognizing I've got a complex group of people. I need to listen to them deeply, individually, to understand and appreciate them. And then the company owns the responsibility of creating a culture that allows those team leaders to advocate for their team and for what their team needs. It's with all of that you're going to start to see transformation. Now, as an employee, if you know your company supports well-being and supports the goal of achieving this big opportunity of flourishing, and you're not getting what you need from your team leader, you can hold them accountable to that. I wish I could go back and tell my younger self this new era that's coming out, because quite frankly, early on in my career, I took a lot of like, I just got to prove I'm a tough, hard worker. I'm going to show up and put in my 40 plus hours, no matter how painful it is. I just got to give it my all and get through that next shift and get through that next thing. And it's just, it was always on me to persevere through that. And I think what I'm excited about is creating a sense of community that allows all of us to leverage each other. Some days you're going to be stronger than I am, and I need to be able to know I can trust you and lean on you to help me through this time. And that's what a good team leader will do.
And this is from inside the organization, where we can tell once we're in the system, how can people that are outside the system say, if I'm interested in working at another organization, what are the signs that I can look for to know if an organization is just checking boxes, pretending to be part of it? How do I actually know what indicators to look for?
That's great. I love that question. I think that it comes in the process of application. I don't think a company really thinks about how onerous some of their processes are for being able to apply for a job. I was in a recent HR meeting where the C-level were all challenged to go to each other's companies and apply for a job. And they all individually went through the process of getting online and trying to figure it out, and to come back and share that experience. How powerful it was to be able to hear these people going, this is painful. It was hard. No one got back to me. I didn't know if my hit submit went anywhere. I didn't get any feedback from anybody. I went weeks without knowing that someone even heard from me. So I think if people actually look from the outside at how these companies are engaging with just little tiny things, they would learn a lot. Imagine if you wanted to apply to a company, they're talking this big talk, and you go to hit submit and it's just crickets. Or if you get a conversation with someone and they're not engaged, they're not asking you anything about you, they're just going through a formula or a checklist or reading the resume that you already submitted. You can learn a lot just in that one exchange. I think that companies have a lot of areas of where they can improve and be able to brag about their caring culture. And it just needs to seep out everywhere.
I like this thinking of when you're talking the big talk, I can just go and look at the customer experience that the organization is providing to me and kind of relate that to the employee experience I can potentially expect there. So those CEOs, those C-level executives that apply to the other organizations, have they changed anything after they've gone through the experience themselves?
Yeah, I think there was a renewed energy around getting much more clear about where technology can actually help and where does it hinder. I think there's an over-reliance on this excitement of saving money, saving time by just layering in some SaaS program or an AI-driven solution. But at the end of the day, it's a human trying to connect to a human. And if there's a bunch of noise and stuff in the middle, it's not going to go anywhere and it's not going to be really fruitful.
It really comes back down to communication. It comes back down to listening. It comes back down to letting each person be an individual, providing the framework that they need so that they can flourish, and asking people what it is that they actually need instead of offering one umbrella solution for everything.
If leaders just did one thing right out of the gate, which is just close the mouth and listen, they would have so much more to be able to help people with. We heard a story earlier today about a janitorial company struggling with how the janitors felt invisible. They felt underrepresented, underappreciated. And when their leadership actually listened to them, they were able to really help them in a big way. And I think it's through storytelling like that, that these CEOs and leaders are going to be able to go, oh, well, that's an interesting approach. I'm going to take that and help my people in a unique way. But again, it comes down to just be quiet and listen and really pay attention, be present with that conversation so that you can really internalize what is being said.
I think the most eye-opening of that story for me when I heard it was that the team working in the janitorial services was not concerned about long work hours, was not concerned about low pay, was not concerned about their physical health. They wanted to be seen. It was all about being valued. It was all about showing the others in that organization what the impact is of the work that they do every single day. And they wanted to be valued like each and every one of us does. Giving them a platform to showcase what it is that they truly do and what their accomplishments and contributions that they do every day, what impact they have on the larger good of an organization, on the larger good of the work of everybody else there, be it the cleanliness of a hospital environment or any other healthcare facility. People couldn't do what they're doing on the level of a doctor or a nurse without the help of the custodial team.
I just think that's a really important concept. You can apply it to any work or any job. No one wants to feel like I'm just coming here to push that widget from this point to that point. That doesn't fill you up as a human. But if you can come in and say, I was able to contribute to the medical community that saved 100 lives today. If I was part of the team that helped save people today, that's a really big accomplishment. And something when you put your head on the pillow at night, you can close your eyes and rest peacefully. You don't rest peacefully knowing that you hammered one bolt into that thing, or screw in a bolt. So Dr. Tyler Vanderweil talks about this in a number of different ways. But one of the things that he and Eileen McNeely of the SHINE program also talk about is job crafting. And so that's one of the areas that Florence helps companies, is to start the conversation around including people to define the work they do that helps them define purpose for that contribution. One of my mentors, Howard Behar, said that let the janitor choose his own broom. So in other words, we should not be out saying, this is what you got to do and this is how you're going to do it. Include that person into the concept of how do I want to deliver the work I do? Here's how I contribute, and it allows me to feel fulfilled, allows me to have purpose, and allows me to feel good about my contribution. And that's a very powerful concept. And I think if more people embrace servant leadership and this idea of deep listening and then supporting, we'll go a lot farther.
So it's recognizing people as human beings, as seeing us as individuals, and as bringing forward the contribution that each and everyone can have to the bigger good in general.
Absolutely.
With that, Marie, I'd like to say thank you so very much for being on the show today. It was a pleasure having you.
Thank you. I love talking about this. So thank you so much for helping me share a little bit more.
And it's so evident in everything that you do. Thank you, Marie.
Thanks for listening. Is there a person on your team or in your network who needs to hear this? Please share this podcast with them. Help me get the word out about the immense value of building connections. If you enjoy this show, please subscribe, tell a friend, and leave me a review. Every voice counts. Until next time, keep on building connections that allow you to thrive.